The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Indiana football fans. This is the Hoosier Huddle podcast coming to you finally after another Indiana win here on a chilly and maybe snowy Monday night here in Indianapolis. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. Along with us is TJ Inman. We'll break down Indiana's 34-32 come from behind but had a big lead win. On Saturday, we'll preview Indiana's trip to number 4, Michigan, on Saturday and talk about all things Indiana football. TJ, how are you?
Doing well. Yeah, things just feel much better after a win, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And, especially after a win like that where 99 times out of 100, that's a game Indiana loses, and they kind of – they flipped the script a little bit. Indiana came out. They had a 16-point second-half lead. Maryland came back against a big rushing attack. That was pretty good. That Anthony McFarland kid's pretty darn good, and you could see why Alabama and Penn State wanted him. But, once Maryland scored that touchdown, it was – uh-oh, here we go again from a lot of the fan base. And to come back, kick that field goal, strip the ball from Tyrell Pegram, and win that game, I think is a big step forward in the mental well-being of this program. Had they lost that, either missed the field goal or, allowed a game-winning score on that final drive, that might have been the final stake in the heart or the nail in the coffin for a lot of the Indiana fan base who is still following the team. But to come back like that, it needed to happen, and it did. And that's – you feel good for the guys on the field. You feel good for the coaching staff. And it was a win where Indiana threw the ball downfield finally. I don't know if they've been reading our stuff or – listen to the podcast, but for weeks we've been saying throw it downfield, guys are open, and they did. Ramsey only completed 16 passes, but he averaged 15.2 yards per completion, which if you're only going to complete 16 passes, I'm fine with 50. I'm fine if it's downfield. That's the way to go. Stevie Scott had a nice game, couple big runs. Finished with 103 yards. He's closing in on that 1,000-yard mark. Defense, the tackling wasn't great, but it's a young defense. They forced their takeaways and got them and held in the red zone, where Maryland has been so good putting the ball in the end zone, in the red zone. And that was the difference in the game, was 17 points off of turnovers for Indiana and holding Maryland to 4 field goals. And that's the difference of the game, is kind of like Indiana going up to Minnesota and settling for 3 field goals up there. You don't like giving up 32 points a game and 30 points a game on the season, but you got to limit the damage. And Indiana did that. They got that 5th win. And now everything you want to play for is on the table in terms of a bowl game. In the last 2 weeks of the season. So you're playing meaningful November football for the 4th year in a row. And frankly, as an IU football fan, that's all you could ask for right now, is playing meaningful football in November, and having that last game against Purdue means something more than the bucket. What are your takeaways from the Maryland win?
It was such an odd game. Because really, Indiana did things that we had not really seen them consistently do all season, which was nice. We kind of one of the things that I was hoping to see was just, hey, do different things. And that's what they did. We saw it in the kickoffs. Indiana, you know, switched from just consistently kicking deep to pooch kicks. And I was surprised by how long it took Maryland to adjust to that. You know, thank you for that, but they should have brought their return man up, you know, further up the field as opposed to having their up man fair catch and attempt to return far quicker than what they did. The one time they did it, it went for a very long return. So I don't think IU's kick coverage woes are fixed by any means, but they, you know, they planned around it and were able to make that work for most of that game. We've been asking for deep throws and just some changes on offense, and that's what happened. Ramsey took deep shots consistently down the sideline, and credit where it's due, some of those deep balls were really nice throws. You know, they weren't 50-yard bombs, but they were nice throws, and they gave Indiana's receivers a chance to make plays, and for the most part, that's what those guys did. Donovan Hale and Nick Westbrook both had nice games, so that was good to see. The running game stepped up. It was a solid complementary piece. You know, the offense just, the numbers were good per play, but they just weren't on the field all that much. No, it was, time of possession was essentially, you know, 2-1 in favor of Maryland. And that's, you know, when you look at those rushing numbers, it's not hard to see why. The time of possession was what it was. McFarland, Johnson, Ty Pigram, when he came in, Leak, Javon Leak, essentially whoever they gave the ball to was finding some success. And that's concerning for sure. You know, you have to question with the defense, it's so young. Have those guys hit a wall? It's gonna, you know, see diminishing returns for the rest of the season.
Tom Allen said something. Tom Allen said something interesting in the postgame. They kind of switched their scheme around on defense, and they had the bye week, but they were trying not to get beat deep and beat by the big play, which is when Maryland gets those explosive, really explosive plays. I know they had like 16 or 17 explosion plays by my count, which I count runs that are 10 yards and over and passes that are 15 yards and over as explosion plays. But they didn't want that home run play, and Maryland didn't really get it outside of two. There was a Leak run for touchdown that he would have scored if they ran that play from their own 1 yard line. That's probably a touchdown, but
yeah.
And then the slant route that set up the Maryland go ahead touchdown. Other than that, they kept the ball in front of them. While they did give up, you know, over 300 yards on the ground, I think that was by design. On, you know, you look at all these gaudy numbers in yardage, there's one stat that actually counts. And that's points on the board, and Indiana put up more than Maryland. Now, you're going to have to fix the tackling. You know, you had a lot of people diving at ankles. I wouldn't even say they were broken tackles. They were just, you know, whiffs or, you know, just ankle biters that didn't make a difference in their rushing attack. But you could see that the emphasis on takeaways is now, IU ranks fourth in the nation in takeaways this year, and it was an emphasis all throughout fall camp and spring practice.
Yeah,
it was a team that struggled in that last year. So, while the defense is giving up yards, it's kind of a boom or bust type of defense. If they're not taking the ball away, you know, last year they were forcing three and outs. Now they're giving up. You know, they get the ball back, but when they don't force a takeaway, it usually results in points for the other team.
Yeah, I did hear that from Tom Allen, and that was noticeable. And I I think that was the right way to play Maryland, because if you are too aggressive, they have the speed at tailback, particularly with McFarland and Johnson, which Johnson was limited in that game. But with McFarland, he's got the speed to, if you take a wrong angle, he's gone. And I completely understand, and it ended up being successful based on stopping them in the red zone. But, you can call that bend but don't break, I guess. IU's run defense ended up, I guess, bending like a pretzel, I suppose you would say. I mean, they bent as much as you possibly could without breaking. And in the end, like you said, the only stat that mattered was they just gave up, they gave up just enough points to get that victory. I do think that you probably don't plan on tackling that poorly, and you don't plan on having time of possession be as warped as it was. So those didn't go according to plan, but I think the kickoff strategy, I think that went pretty much according to plan, as well as they hoped it could have. And then I would say that obviously limiting the major explosive plays, while Maryland did have quite a few longer plays, they didn't have that many that were, your 50, 60-yard touchdowns. They didn't have any of those. So you forced Maryland to convert in the red zone, and they were unable to do so for touchdowns just often enough. You were able to force those takeaways, which you're able to capitalize on for a decent number of points. In terms of just Maryland, that worked. But the tackling, particularly against in the open field against a running back, and I noticed this quite often with guys, either linebackers or defensive backs, that they were isolated one-on-one on the outside against McFarland, diving for his ankles, it didn't work to get those tackles. Well, I mean, those tackles aren't going to stop Caron Higdon next week or this week against Michigan, and they're not going to stop DJ Knox against Purdue. Those guys are both strong enough to run through those types of tackles, so that is obviously a big area of concern moving forward. But I do just want to laud the players for sticking in there. It was a cold day. Probably did not feel too bad to the players on the field. Cold day in Memorial Stadium, and the Hoosiers had to play through that. And it was, like you said, that was a game that, not just statistically, but just from a narrative perspective, it certainly felt in the stands that, here we go again. Indiana gives up a lead and loses a game that, they needed to win. And then when Maryland scores, and even after Indiana scored, there was a feeling of inevitability that, we're not sure how it's going to happen, but we know what's going to happen. Is Maryland going to kick a field goal as time expires? Are they going to complete a big pass, which they haven't really been able to do all day? Are they going to, break a couple of tackles and get themselves into the end zone with the long run? How's it going to happen? Weren't sure about that, but it felt fairly certain that the Terrapins were going to find a way to get back out in front as game ended. But like you said, Indiana flipped the script on that one, and it felt like an important event that happened, just for the mental health of the program, and something that you hope is able to carry over, that IU can take confidence from that and say, look, we were the ones that were able to make the plays this time. It wasn't a failure to make that one or two plays to change the game, and having it happen against you, it was this time we're going to be the ones that make that play. And kudos to the defense for stepping up and getting those takeaways. I'll ask you, obviously, the big decision at the end of the game. Indiana faces a fourth down in scoring range, but you know, not, and I don't remember the time that was left on the clock.
2:52,
but they ran the play clock down.
2:40.
2:52. So we'll say under 3 minutes. You know, they're at the, what, the 25, 26? Is that right?
I think the 27-yard line.
44-yard field goal, so the 27, and it's a fourth and short, but not an automatic. You know, not one where you would feel extremely confident about just, you know, sneaking and punching it forward a half a yard and getting the first down. So, you know, Tom Allen elects to run the play clock down, call timeout, and then kick the field goal, and Logan Justice nails it to give Indiana the eventual, you know, eventual game-winning score. I know that there was some disagreement on what the Hoosiers should do in our Hoosier Huddle group chat or group text, you know, during the game. And I could tell you, sitting in the stands, there was disagreement from fans. A lot of, you know, go for it was being called out. And I think part of that is just the feeling that you didn't want to give Maryland any time with the ball. So what do you think of the decision from Tom Allen to kick that field goal? And obviously, you know, kudos to Logan Justice as he continued to be reliable. And I think proving that Tom Allen had every right to trust him with that big kick, and he nailed it. There was no doubt about that one. So credit to him for that. But what do you think of the decision? And if Tom Allen were to do something different, you know, what would you have seen him proceed with? So kind of take over, if you go back, try to put yourself in at the time the decision was made. Obviously now we can say, well, great decision, you know, because it worked out. But what do you think?
Yeah, it was the right decision because it worked out. If he'd missed the field goal,
right,
or, you know, then you'd say, well, he should have went for it. My gut call, if I had to make the call on the field as a coach, I probably would have gone for it. But there's a reason I'm not coaching college football. It would have been, to me, there was a lot of time left on the clock. He clearly had more faith in his defense than I did. Maryland had just marched down the field, scored a touchdown. I probably would have gone for it, or at least tried to draw him offside. But as Tom Allen said postgame, they've tried that before and it has backfired.
Yep.
You know, he's learned from that mistake. I think taking the points wasn't the safe play because it wasn't a gimme field goal either, especially in that weather. And Logan Justice has been a pleasant surprise this year. It was a battle all a camp between him and Charles Campbell, and he came out. And that's going to be something to watch going forward, is the battle between Charles Campbell and Logan Justice. I think next year, I think Justice has one more year left, and you bring in Charles Campbell on scholarship to kick, and he was, you know, one of the top five, or, you know, top five kickers in the country coming out of high school. But I, just with the time left on the clock, I thought that they were going to go for it and try and get the first down, bleed the clock down. I think Maryland only had two timeouts left, bleed the clock down, and you'd probably get it under a minute. Let's see, if you take two timeouts, it could, yeah, about a, get it about under 2 minutes, you know, maybe a minute and a half, and move that field goal a little bit closer. But, you know, when it's all said and done, they kicked the field goal, they made it, they got the stop on defense, and
yeah,
it was the right call. What annoyed me about it was the fans were clamoring, run a play, as they were running the timeout. And that's something that on that drive that Indiana didn't do well. I think twice after that Stevie Scott long run, twice they used tempo and snapped the ball with 0.2 seconds left on the clock on each time. And those are, that's 40 seconds, you know, 40 seconds 50 seconds, you can run off the clock there, and you could go no huddle tempo and fake snap and all that stuff. I get using tempo if you're down on the other side of the field, but when you're, I think Scott's run got him down to the 33 or 34 or something. When you're that close with that much time left, take your time, get the play you need to, and if you're comfortable kicking a field goal there, kick the field goal. So that I thought was maybe they could have done better, but that, you know, they kicked field goal one, got the fumble. So I'm not going to pick apart Tom Allen's decision. I did think that they were going to go for it. I understand why fans wanted to go for it, but if he went for it and missed it, they would have skewered him. That would have been, that's a terrible coaching mistake. How do you not kick the field goal there? So, you know, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't type of thinking there. But, you know, I thought it ended up being the right call. I'm not going to kill him over it. Either one would have been okay with me. He made field goal. That's what counted. If he missed it, it would have been nice to be, you know, 5 or 6 yards closer. But Logan Justice, to his credit, kicked the ball through the uprights and is having a pretty special season.
Yeah, I'd agree with all that. It was a tough call for Tom Allen to make. Statistically speaking, you were in a range where it was really a toss-up between what was the quote-unquote right move, which, you know, those stats do not take into – they can't. The percentages, they don't take into account the confidence you have in your kicker, the game, the flow of the game, how you feel about your things into account. But just strictly from a numbers perspective, that's truly a toss-up on whether or not to go for that thing. One thing to keep in mind is I feel fairly confident that I know what the play would have been if IU was going to go for it. I think Maryland knows what the play call would have been. Yeah, I think Maryland knows what the play call would have been. Now, IU was consistently getting 3 or 4 yards on those runs, and then, Scott would bust out his longer runs once or twice. I think he had maybe 2 or 3 that game that were longer than that. But he was consistently getting 3 and 4 yards a pop. So that's not to say it wouldn't have worked, but, we would have seen, anything different than a handoff to Scott up the middle, which is somewhat understandable, but I'm glad we did not go down that path. So looking ahead, you're kind of looking now, realistically speaking, very little that happens in Ann Arbor on Saturday is likely going to be of much importance unless we're talking injuries. We have to be realistic here. I know the players are going to go up there to win. I know the coaches are going to go up there to try to win. Realistically, even if Michigan was significantly worse than what they are, it's just not a place that IU goes and wins.
They haven't won up there since 1967. I hate to feed the conspiracy theorists, but you have a showdown for the Big East title next week in Columbus that you know the Big Ten wants, a winner-take-all game and needs it, and they need Michigan to go to the playoff and all those things. So I will bet anybody any fake amount of money that Indiana does not get a 50-50 call up in Ann Arbor. They never get it, and I think this year is a year that they particularly don't get it because – and I hate saying it, but it is a realistic argument that the Big Ten plays favorites when it comes to officiating. They favor those big-name schools. They favor the money. And I don't know if Jim Delaney makes a call, But you could bet that Indiana's not going to get a favorable call on a 50-50 play next week. I think going into Ann Arbor, the biggest thing is just get out of there healthy. You know, anybody yep. who's nicked up, you know, you were missing Raekwon Jones last week, which I think was a big reason why IU struggled in that run. He's the quarterback of that defense. You lost Micah McFadden during the game. He should be back. Jacob Robinson, I think, played only one play or one series and went back out.
That's unfortunate, too.
It's unfortunate because that burns his red shirt if he did have anything
yep.
thought about redshirting. And then, you know, WAP's now out for the season. They announced that today. With some sort of injury, apparently unrelated to his ankle. So we'll see about that. And then just get out of there healthy. This might be a game, if you fall behind big at halftime, you might see Mike Fiacable come in and play. You got to keep Ramsey healthy and not banged up for Purdue to where he could use his legs. You got to be healthy going at Purdue because that's your shot. That's your shot at a bowl game.
Yep.
To get the bucket back and to get all this momentum back. So you got to get out healthy. You know, use your running backs. Use your depth at running back. Use Ricky Brookins at running back. Use Majette at running back. You know, Ronnie Walker, too, needs to be fed the ball a little bit. As good as Stevie Scott has been, you need him 100% too. And this defense is nasty. You know, maybe use some of these young receivers like Jacoby Hewitt and guys who still have games eligible and still eligible to redshirt and to keep Donovan Hale healthy and to keep, you know, Nick Westbrook healthy and all those guys as healthy as they can be going into Purdue. So that to me is the biggest thing in Michigan. And you know, just don't give up 70 points. And I hate saying that, but don't go up there and get embarrassed. It's kind of like the Ohio State game in terms of just go, play your game, play well. If you're getting your tails kicked at halftime, pull your starters, keep people healthy, maybe get some of these young guys some reps at the big house against a really good team, some valuable reps, and move on, because the game that really counts is Purdue. Now, as big of an upset and as big of a win it would be to win up at Ann Arbor, the more important game is Purdue. And, you know, I think FPI gives IU a 3% chance of winning and things like that. So just get out of there healthy and put forth an effort that you can hold your head up high. And, you know, Michigan's given up 3 touchdowns in 3 weeks, and they haven't given up more than 13 points in a month. And their last game that they gave up more than that was 21 to Maryland. The most points they've given up was 24 to Notre Dame all season, and that was the first game of the year. So this defense is nasty. If Indiana's down by more than 3 touchdowns at halftime, I personally would pull anybody who's nicked up and rest them, get them ready and healthy for Purdue and play some of these young guys who need the reps and kind of use it as a scrimmage type game.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds, you know, defeatist, I suppose, but it's reality. And I think
it's reality
is,
in the Big Ten.
And I think it is I don't know what you'd call it. I would say the logical and kind of correct decision to make is practical, I guess would be the word to use for it. Indiana, there have been the past few years where I think the Hoosiers have played Michigan equal or have been the slightly better team than the Wolverines. This Michigan team is quite a bit different. Watching them all year, and just for as a, it won't be fun on Saturday, but just as a matter of watching a player kind of take full advantage of his physical gifts and play with just a level of effort, and I guess the, in football parlance you'd say a motor. Just watch Chase Winovich play. I mean, he gets after it, and it is a lot of fun to watch if you're a neutral, or I'm sure if you're a Michigan fan. As an IU fan, it's probably not going to be much fun, but you know, Chase Winovich is an example of what that defense does. He is in constant attack mode. That's what Michigan does. You know, they're going to be coming after Peyton Ramsey hard, and it's going to be very important for the IU offensive line to do their best for the play calling to set Ramsey up for some type of success. Because if you sit him back there and let him be a target, that Michigan front is going to get him, and they're gonna put him in the ground. And Don Brown is certainly one of the best defensive coordinators that's in the game. And on the other side of the ball, you know, Michigan's opened things up on offense some. They're still going to rely on that run game, and Caron Higdon and Chris Evans both going to get a lot of work. You'll see in short yardage situations, they're going to hand it off to their fullback, and it's going to work more times than not. And then Shea Patterson at quarterback, he has been better in the last month than I anticipated him being. I thought he started out very shaky, but really it seems like they have kind of figured out what he does well, and they've incorporated some of that into their attack, and he's adjusted his game some to match what Michigan needs. You know, they have an offense that knows when they go out there, we have a few priorities. Number one, do not put our defense in a bad position with bad turnovers. Protect the ball. And number two, you know, they can afford to play the field position games. They don't have to take chances on offense. However, that defense has given them the liberty to open things up somewhat, and they've got some downfield weapons that can hurt you. You know, the only thing that they are really lacking, in my opinion, on offense is, you know, a kind of a tight end that can really hurt you. They don't have that. They do use their tight end some, but they don't have one that can really hurt you. But they've got everything else that you'd like to have from a good offense. And then certainly their defense is championship material. So for about a month now, I've projected Michigan coming out of the Big Ten and being the 4 seed in the college football playoff and taking on Alabama. Michigan is an incredibly good team, and IU would do very well, as you said, just to get out of there healthy, forget about the Michigan game as soon as it's over, and turn all your attention towards the Boilermakers.
Yeah, that's, you know, I hate putting it that way, but you gotta lose the battle or win the war, so to speak. And going up there, it's gonna be tough. And if you're hanging around at halftime, sure, go for it. But there's no point if you're down, you know, 4 touchdowns going into half. You got to seriously think about taking Ramsey out of the game and putting somebody else in, because God forbid he gets hurt without Michael Penix there. I don't know if Reese Taylor is going to be good enough to put up points against Purdue alone. Now, maybe in a cat package, he'll be fine, but to ask him to make a start against Purdue in the final game of the year while he hasn't taken a snap during a game at quarterback all year, that's asking the impossible. So you got to protect your guys and things like that. But Michigan's really, really good. They're better than I thought they were. They're on their revenge tour,
yep,
so to speak, and you know, maybe you catch them looking ahead to Ohio State. Doubtful, because I think they're going to be focused on all these games, especially being in the thick of the playoff race. And really having no margin for error with that loss to Notre Dame. They're going to need some style points to stay, you know, for seeding and things like that. So, you know, I don't think they overlook Indiana and look ahead to Ohio State, but maybe, just maybe, catch them on that one day and you can make a game of it. But other than that, just, you know, you don't sacrifice yourself against Michigan and sacrifice the season, because your season is the next week against Purdue. Predictions for Saturday, TJ?
Well, I currently predict Michigan to win. As far as the score goes, you know, a couple weeks ago I made a comment that, you know, I didn't know if Indiana would cross midfield against this Michigan defense the way IU's offense was looking. I feel better about the offense now that they finally integrated the vertical passing game, and you know, I feel like everything that we had hoped it would look like, certainly it did against Maryland. You know, again, IU's offense ran just over 50 plays and was well on its way to, if they run their normal amount of plays or even close to it, you know, they're eclipsing 500 yards against the defense with the top 35 defense. So I feel like Indiana's defensive backs are capable of going up against darn near any secondary and coming up with some plays. So I do think Indiana's going to be able to have a little bit of success on offense. Again, that's all relative against this defense, but I think Indiana will be able to get on the board, maybe a touchdown, a few field goals. So I'll say Indiana gets, we'll say 13. Michigan, I think, probably keeps it as stale and conservative as possible. They don't want to show Ohio State anything additional that they haven't already seen. So I'll say Michigan puts up 38. So we'll go 38-13. The Wolverines very comfortably in a game that I think both teams would prefer to just get on the next week.
Yeah, and I'm right along there with you. I go 42. Michigan has won the last two games, 42-7, I believe.
Yep.
I don't see them going for the trifecta, but I'm going to go 42-10. Yeah, Indiana gets a touchdown with their deep passing game and maybe a field goal. It's going to be tough sledding all day. So I'll go Michigan 42, Indiana 10. I think, I don't want to say they're going to take the foot off break, but you're right. They're not going to, you know, show too much of their hand heading into Ohio State. You know that Michigan's frothing at the mouth for that game, having not beaten them under Harbaugh, having a couple close calls, you know, blowing a big lead last year, having a kind of a blown call the year before at Ohio State. And they know that this is their shot to go make some noise on the national stage the next week. So I'm going to go 42-10. Hopefully, as we said many times before on the show, just get out of there healthy. And I hate going up to Michigan personally. They're trying to screw me again on a parking pass. Apparently, Michigan doesn't have a FedEx account that can't send it down to me. So I have to create a FedEx account and pay the $20 for them to send my parking pass down, because Michigan is so in need of money. Not to mention that you have to pay $50 as media to park up there. I maybe they didn't sell all 108,000 seats this week, but yeah. So I don't like going up there, but it's a game that it's a fun venue in terms of being at the Big House, but it's gonna be a tough game for Indiana, and you just. Do it's kind of you know, kind of like the Ohio State game, where you play well enough that you don't get embarrassed but don't get hurt and things like right. that. So well, that does it for this week's episode of the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I just want to give a shout out to Vintage Brand Sports. Our bingo game has been going very, very well. If you have bingo winners, remember to send them in so we could give you credit and get you some raffles for some cool canvases and some cool vintage sports stuff. They have a lot of cool things. The holiday season is coming up. The link is at the top of our page to go there if you have sports fans in your family or treating yourself to a Christmas gift or a hanukkah gift or any kind of gift this year. Check that out. Some really cool stuff up there. So thanks for joining me, TJ, and hopefully we'll talk next week. Get ready for another big bucket game that's for the right to go to a bowl game.
Yeah, I know both of us are already looking forward to that one. It's, you know, deaths. I mean, obviously we prefer to have Indiana already with six and you're just trying to get to seven and take back the bucket. It'd be huge either way. But, you know, Purdue plays Wisconsin this Saturday. Wisconsin is definitely struggling. But, you know, let's say that the Boilers somehow drop that game. At home and drop to 5-6. Assuming Indiana loses, you'll have both teams sitting at 5-6, looking to go, you know, looking to get that sixth victory to get to a bowl game. Either way, it's going to be a huge one, and already looking forward to it. But certainly, I won't turn down an opportunity to see the Hoosiers on the field. So, you know, it's certainly probably going to be ugly, but you can take positives from individual performances and hopefully stay healthy for everybody and get on to the Boilers. But we'll see. You never know. Maybe Indiana's able to make it more competitive than what we're saying, and you feel even better about that Purdue game. We'll see.
Yeah, and we'll see, and we'll talk about that Purdue game next week.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll put the fans on notice. Indiana needs – you want Indiana to go to a bowl game. You want that sixth win. You want a chance to get seven. Purdue showed up last year in the same situation. It's time. The ball is in your court. It's time to put your money where it is and show up and be a football team because bowl game is still on the table. Bucket is still on the table, and last, frankly, Purdue punked the IU fans for the last couple of years by turning out, selling out that game at 5-6. No excuse to not go to the game. They showed up at Thanksgiving, so I know there's big rivalry between the fans. They like to throw shots at each other. It's Indiana's turn to show out and show what they're all about, and you know, kind of back up all the smack talk that they talk about Purdue, because Purdue backed it up last year and frankly all year this year, even, you know, having great crowds when they were 0-3 against Boston College and stuff like that. So balls in your court, Indiana fans, going into Purdue. Indiana's next game is at Michigan, kicks off at 4:00 on Fox. Gus Johnson is on the call, and crazy things happen when Gus Johnson is on the call. So don't rule out something crazy happened, but it might be a long day for the Hoosiers on Saturday. So once again, kickoff is at 4:00 in Ann Arbor. You can watch on Fox, Channel 59 here in Indianapolis. You could also listen to Don Fisher on the radio, and I will be doing stats with Fish and Buxor in the radio booth. So if the stats are wrong, you could blame me, and that's what they do anyway. So I could take it, but hopefully everybody enjoys the game. Last 2 weeks of the regular season playing meaningful football in November. All right, we'll be back next week. Check us out at HoosierHuddle.com. Also on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. If you're doing Christmas shopping, check out our Amazon ads. There are a lot of discounted Indiana apparel items. There's a sweatshirt that I just put up there that's about $15 off. Fleece hoodie, looks really comfortable. Vintage Brands, again, also has good stuff for the sports fan in your family or yourself. And enjoy the final 2 weeks of the college football regular season, because it's going to be a crazy one.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.